Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin on Sunday, some Sunday in November 2021. And you're very welcome here to be with us. We are Turning Towards Life, and this is a Third Space project. If you want to find out more about us, you can go to www.wearethirdspace.org. And recently we've been getting more emails from people. So we want to encourage you to keep doing that. It's so lovely to hear from you. So Justin@turningtowards.life or Lizzie@turningtowards.life. We love hearing your messages of support, of inquiry, of commentary, anything. We love to hear from you. So please feel free to reach out and talk to us on email if you would like to. So if you're a beginner with us today, what we do is that we have a source. So something that is like a springboard into an unfolding live unrehearsed conversation. And this week, Justin, you've got this beautiful source by Norman Fisher called Mishaps. Turn all mishaps into the path. And I've been in amongst this reflection since you posted it, Justin. I'm so grateful to be here to talk about this with you today. So thank you for bringing this particular something to us.
Good morning, everyone. I love what we just said about a source, Lizzie. Because a source is like a spring. It's also like a springboard, but it's also like a spring.
Yeah.
It's something which flows into the conversation in a way that we don't know. And this source has been with me a lot this week. We are having this conversation towards the end of the climate meeting that's happening in Glasgow, which I think it would be accurate to say that the climate situation that we're in, you might call the giantest of mishaps. And I've wanted to see if I could find a way of coming at both the huge situations that we're in that are just here and the small ones that feel big in my own life, all the ways that life isn't the way I wanted it or imagined it, or maybe where I've taken a misstep and wanting to find a more life-giving way of being in relationship to them. So this is from Norman Fisher's excellent book, Training in Compassion. Before I read it, also for anyone who, if you're just joining us for the first time, you can find all of the sources a little bit later on our Instagram feed at turningtowards.life, which is the website that hosts all of this, and also in our Facebook group. And you're very welcome to join our Facebook group where we are going live currently and going live every week. So we are, after all, not talking about miracles. We're not talking about affirmations or wishful thinking. We're talking about training the mind. If you were to meditate daily, bringing up this slogan, turn all mishaps into the path, in your sitting, writing it down, repeating it many times a day, reflecting on it, reading the words of this book, this passage many times and thinking about them, then you could see that a change of heart and mind could take place in just the way I'm describing. It simply makes sense. The mind and heart react according to their well-worn habits. Whatever habit of mind you have now comes from your actions and thoughts of the past, however unexamined or unintentional they may be. Whatever habits of mind you will have in the future depend upon what you do or don't do from now on. The way you spontaneously react in times of trouble is not fixed. Your mind, your heart can be trained. Once you have a single experience of reacting differently, you will be encouraged. Next time, it's more likely that you will take yourself in hand. Each time becomes easier than the last. And little by little, you establish a new habit. When something difficult happens, you'll train yourself to stop saying, "Damn, why did this have to happen?" and begin saying, "Yes, of course. This is how it is. Let me turn toward it. Let me practice with it. Let me go beyond entanglement to gratitude," because you will have realized that because you're alive and not dead, because you have a human body and not some other kind of body, because the world is a physical world and not an ethereal world, and because all of us together as people are the way we are, bad things are going to happen. It's the most natural, the most normal, the most inevitable thing in the world. It is not a mistake, and it isn't anyone's fault, and we can make use of it to drive our gratitude and our compassion deeper.
The way you spontaneously react in times of trouble is not fixed. Your mind, your heart can be trained. Once you have a single experience of reacting differently, you will be encouraged. Next time, it is more likely that you will take yourself in hand. Each time becomes easier than the last, and little by little, you establish a new habit. When something difficult happens, you will train yourself to stop. To stop saying, damn, why did this have to happen? And begin saying, yes, of course, this is how it is. Let me turn toward it. Let me practice with it. Let me go beyond entanglement to gratitude. Because you will have realized that because you are alive and not dead, because you have a human body and not some other kind of a body, because this world is a physical world and not an ethereal world, and because all of us together as people are the way we are, bad things are going to happen. It is the most natural, most normal, the most inevitable thing in the world. It is not a mistake, and it isn't anyone's fault. And we can make use of it to drive our gratitude and our compassion deeper.
Feels so good to hear you read that, Lizzie. And I suppose the reason why it felt so important for me to bring this, and I'm imagining for Norman Fisher to write this, is because this is available to us, and it's not the most intuitive, ordinary way that we come at difficulty. Mm. And I've been able to feel in my own body this week, amidst, I really want to, as I say this, Lizzie, hold together sort of the large scale and the small scale all at the same time. Yeah, so I've been following a COP26 talks and feeling my encouragement that we have structures in the world where we can get together to talk about this, and my despair at how big the difficulty is and the consequences of our not facing it and how difficult it is to unentangle everything that we must do in order to respond. And then I've been this week, I suppose, in a sort of parallel process, feeling all the ways in which somehow I didn't find it in myself, at least this is the way my story goes, I didn't find it in myself in my life to have things exactly the way I imagined they should be, and sometimes far off from how I imagined they should be. Or when people I love are suffering, or when things are very uncertain, and I can feel how easy it is for my body to go into some kind of all kinds of things that are actually true but deeply unhelpful. So despair is very easy for me. Blame, particularly self-blame, is very easy for me. The kind of bodily feeling of nothing's possible, so I might as well just go and curl up under the duvet and hide. And there is some value in curling up under the duvet and hiding for some of the time, so I don't want to get into a sort of turning away from all of that. But I love what Norman says, that we react, the mind and heart react according to our well-worn habits, and however I'm responding now is born of actions and thoughts of the past. And that means that the habits of mind I have in the future depend upon what I do or don't do from now. And I think that that's the line that's the one that is so liberating for me is, oh, in every moment, how the world shows up for me and how I'm capable of bringing myself comes from what I do right now, no matter what the sort of the weight or the momentum of what's come in the past. I have a chance of responding in a different way. And so then this, I want to just read back something that you read, Lizzie, because it touched me so deeply. Once we realize that we're not, because we are alive, because we have a human body, because the world is a physical world, and because all of us are the way we are, this is how the world is going to be. So can I then turn towards it? And that act of turning towards it comes back for me, to something we've talked about many times, which is the possibility of hope, which is I can't stop the world being filled of things that we don't want to happen, because it is the way the world is, but there are steps I can take. I really can. And the ones I can take start with compassion for all of us for being in this situation and gratitude that we get to be here. And that's a definition of gratitude that really helps me. It's not pretending that everything's fine, although there's a lot that's fine. It's, oh my goodness, I'm here and I can turn towards this. Oh my goodness, I'm here and I can respond. And it seems to me that that's the question that we've been asking all the way through these hundreds of weeks of talking with one another is, what does it take to find ourselves in the midst of whatever it is to go, I'm here. Gosh, I'm here. So now I have a choice about turning in or turning away.
Mm.
And what an honor and a privilege it is to in any way to be able to turn in.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, it feels really important and kind of possibility making. I think everyone knows what it's like to keep finding ourselves in the same place again and again and again. And somehow, because I think so much of life is a kind of pattern of some kind, isn't it? You know, oh, we're in the same argument again, or the same dynamics come up again, or the same kind of things happen to me again. And to relate to it this way seems like a different opportunity of a way to at least, the very least, see the thing. And then, as you're saying, like, have a choice somewhere in it of, like, you know, when Norman says the way you spawn the way you spontaneously react in times of trouble is not fixed. It's so important that that got written, that got told here. Because so many times I felt completely powerless in that kind of habitual, the way my heart and mind has been trained to now. And then very occasionally there's a kind of, I'm not going to do the same thing. So I know it's not fixed. You know, I have experience of it not being fixed, of like, oh, this is the thing. I'm not going to do the same thing again and see what happens. And it's really hard, but it's possible. At least I found it really hard to not do the same thing again. And this invitation to let me turn toward it, let me practice with it, let me go beyond entanglement to gratitude. It's like something opens here that paves a very different path. You know, like, that you'll be able to say this much better than me, Justin, but you know when there's a small little angle at the front of something, the trajectory of it is huge. It feels like that. It's like a tiny little different choice creates a whole different set of possibilities. And so what happens after that little point of doing something differently than you did before, the magnitude of it is much bigger than the magnitude of the thing you did in the moment. And so I can feel how, you know, you're talking about this environmental something and this huge big matter that's happening in the world at the moment, and it makes me feel hopeful about that too, because I often have the feeling, well, I'm just sort of one single little tiny human, what difference am I going to make? But when I sense into this trajectory thing of like the tiniest little move here creates a whole different set of possibilities, I can feel the truth of that with the big questions that we face as well. Like, it makes me feel strengthened about all the little decisions that I can make that will add up to something else, because the trajectory of my actions is much more significant than the one I'm taking right now, which feels so teensy. So I'm really grateful for that in this moment. And the other thing that happens to me here, Justin, is this kind of realization that a life filled with this, a life filled with mishaps that are inevitable being turned into my path, whether it's in relationship or in just being in the world or bigger things. To be in the world this way makes the being in the world interesting. You know, I've been watching some films recently about relationships and what happens in the course of a marriage. And, you know, obviously these are just, you know, creative pieces on what can happen. And I feel really like we don't have a narrative for mishaps. We don't have a kind of, oh, this is what is supposed to happen, because we're learning. We have a kind of, oh my gosh, there's something wrong. We need to leave each other. We need to run. Or we need to get out of this. But so little is there a kind of a way that anything like this is normalized in our art and culture. And I really think there's such a space for it, to feel into a world where mishaps are, as Norman's saying, natural and normal and inevitable. And therefore we get to deepen because of it. Like, that just feels like, oh, now I'm interested. Like, now that I can feel the life in this, rather than, oh, that's not working, I'm going to go in this direction. Oh, no, that's not right, I'm going to go here. It's like turning a life into a system of diversions that keeps you going in the same circle, like diverting you into a smaller and smaller circle, versus one that the possibilities are unknown and endless and compelling and interesting. So when we get into difficulty and we treat it like it's the path, more life is exposed, is brought forth. We learn more, we deepen, we can see more, feel more. That feels like a much more, like a life I really want to live, rather than the kind of hopelessness of keeping on being diverted and never finding the thing that I really want, because the diversion is the same each time.
Just I'm smiling. It suddenly occurred to me, and so I'm glad you brought us back to the topic of this piece. We've been talking about the training ourselves part, but the topic of mishaps being part of the path. Now, as you were speaking, I was thinking, was wondering about all the ways in which our culture teaches us the opposite of this. And I think our culture really does. I mean, really, really, in a huge way, has trained us that mishaps are to be avoided. They're someone's mistake, someone is to blame. And if mishaps happen, then the worst of the world is happening and we ought to run from it as soon as we can and get ourselves into a situation when it happens. So when you were talking about relationships, Lizzie, the idea that if you and I are in some kind of difficulty, or if you're in a marriage and it's in some kind of difficulty, that the thing to do is to, let me find one where there isn't this problem. I'll run and it will all be okay. And we're taught it from a very, very early age. We're taught it in our education system that the thing to do is to get good results. And if you don't get good results, that this is terrible. And everything hinges on that moment where you go, oh, what a relief, I got a good result. Or my life is over because I couldn't get the result that I was apparently meant to get. And I was laughing about what it would be like. I've been traveling on the underground again, on the tube. And of course there's adverts. And I love the adverts on the tube, because most of the adverts on the tube are along the lines of, because they have very short space in order to sell us thing. And they're along the lines of, if you buy our thing, everything's going to be okay. You buy our vitamins, or you buy this product, or you book this holiday, whatever. And I was imagining what it would be like if they said, if you buy this, some things will happen. Some of them you'll like and some of them you won't. And it probably won't go exactly the way you're imagining it, but it will all be an opportunity to learn something. It's just not in our...
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if it didn't do the thing, that's the promise always, is that it will take... The reason I'm saying this is there's the promise that's in our culture is that we'll be spared this. And I think it's incredibly damaging to us, because, like you said, it puts us in this position that there's difficulty in my relationship with someone who is really close into me, so I have to run from it, or I have to judge myself or the other person that some disaster is happening. I think it also applies to the climate emergency, because it has us go, I can feel this in myself. We should never have got into this position, but now we are in this position and it's bigger than us. We ought to just give up and bury our heads in the ground and hope that it all goes away. But instead, if you see that mishaps are part of the path, if you see that making mistakes and other people making mistakes and things going the way that we don't want them to go is an inevitable part of being alive, having a human body, living in the physical world, being with people.
Yeah.
Then, as Norman says, every mishap is an opportunity for us to go, how can I bring myself in this situation in a way that honors the capacity, the love, the creativity, the compassion, the aliveness that I have and other people have?
Mm-hmm.
How can we turn into life that way, imaginatively and responsively, that may not solve the that isn't going to stop the world being full of mishaps?
Yeah.
It might resolve this one. You know, there are some mishaps that we can resolve,
mm-hmm.
and we can make better, and we can make sure they don't happen again, and we must do that where we can. But there's also the whole class of inevitable difficulties that are going to keep it's never going to get us to a place where we're free of the next mishap coming. That's mm-hmm. that's the myth. And I'm just really touched by the idea of what if every time we were in difficulty, we noticed our tendency to freeze or to fight and to go, this shouldn't be the way it is. Why did this have to happen? And to blame ourselves and other people. And if we were to turn towards another and go, this is really hard.
Yeah.
Wow, this is really hard. And I'm really hurting that it's hard. And I know it's difficult for you too. How can we, what in ourselves could we be in contact with that we could bring? And what in one another could we be in contact with?
Mm.
Like when I can trust your amazing imaginativeness and faithfulness and hopefulness, Lizzie, and creativity. And I can find my own steadfastness and courage and love. Then we might be able to look at one another and go, this difficulty we're in with one another, or this difficulty we're in that the world is in,
mm-hmm.
we might not be able to make it better, but we can bring ourselves. And I'm not really sure any of us have ever really got taught that. I mean, obviously some people figure it out, but it's really important that we know this.
Yeah, Justin, where my mind is going on this as well is I had a session this week with someone who's unwell in a quite an unobvious way. And it seems to me that this also goes for the body as well. You know, we're not taught how to relate to the mishap of the body in a way what's here? What's the opportunity? We're taught to relate in a kind of, let's get rid of this as quickly as possible. So the narrative of mishaps in the body being the path is so far away from the way that our systems work and the way we have conversations with each other about when our bodies don't work. And I feel particularly close to this week because it really mattered that we were in a conversation about what it was like to be unwell. Because of that narrative of you got to get rid of it, no one actually has the conversation that the person wants to have really on a deeper level about how it feels to be unwell. It doesn't allow for that space. So you say, I'm not well. And the conversation that's afforded to you is, how do we fix you? Which is an important conversation, but it's not the whole conversation. So there's this whole other swathe of things that need to be spoken about in order for someone's experience to be brought to the light and for someone to feel seen and held and acknowledged. And of course, there's all kinds of things that connect to physical unwellness, which aren't only the physical part, but, you know, things on the inside, internally, emotionally, environmentally, systemically, that might be having an impact that never get acknowledged because we're not seeing our bodily unfolding as our path. We're seeing it as, it, my body has to be in this condition, otherwise I can't tolerate it and I'm not even going to be in conversation with it. I just need to get rid of it. And of course, sometimes the body complies with that. And a lot of the time the body doesn't comply with that. And it will keep trying to open the conversation until we have the one that needs to be had. So I'm feeling really passionate about this kind of cultural misunderstanding that there is about the conversations that need to be had around the body as well, in order for wellness to become possible again. And, you know, when you're talking about blame, I think part of the kind of the broader narrative about the body means that we often blame ourselves for being unwell. Like there's something that we have to take on a burden, that we did something, that then that means we're unwell. Like it's easy to say, well, I should have done this and therefore, and then I wouldn't be like this. Or, and it's such a small way of relating to it, to blame oneself. Like, of course, it can be part of it, of course. But there's so much more involved in the conversation about wellness than whether or not you did something wrong or not. And I feel grief that we don't have a good enough conversation yet about this in broad cultural world terms. And I can see how that's also not separate from the environment thing too. Like we're relating to everything in this particular way where we're blaming people and we're feeling disempowered and we're feeling small and like there's something else in control of everything. And I can feel the heaviness of that on my heart as I say it, and how important what Norman's message is to all of us. It has to be, we have to bring all of this difficulty into the light of our relationships and our compassion and our being with. Otherwise, it is just keeping on this in this, it's like there's a habit of the mind that's an individual thing, but there's like a habit of society as well, of like how we treat things, how we treat each other, how we treat the environment, how we treat illness, how we treat, and it all then extrapolates into the systems that we create and the paths we take and the conversations we can have and the conversations we won't have and the things that feel available to us and the things that don't. So it just feels very, very, very important to talk about this.
One of the things I've been learning that I'm relearning from what you're saying, Lizzie, you said this thing that I think is so helpful for all of us, which is to say, yes, there's the conversation about how do we make it better. And that's necessary when it's possible, whether it's with our bodies or with the world or with a relationship, whatever. But there's the other question, which is, I'm going to phrase this way, that the words that came to me is, what's this like for you to be in this?
Yeah.
And I know that when I've been really ill, or grieving, and I've noticed this around other people as well, with the unavoidable mishaps of the body, which include death and loss as well. We get frozen in the, I don't know what to say because I can't make it better. Mm. And I can't deal with the how it feels for me to be alongside you and the thing that I can't make better and the mishap that I can't make better. And that it's such a generous question just to say to the person and to ourselves, what's it like for you right now to be in this? Will you tell me? And we can do that with anyone. You can do it with someone who's experiencing a momentary health crisis or a deep, long going, not going to get better health crisis, or someone who's in the middle of loss of any kind. We can say to one another, will you tell me what it's like to be here? What it's like to be in this? And that we may not always want to say that to one another, but the conversation is the opening into what Norman says, which is recognizing that we're in this world as it is, and these things are going to happen. And can we turn towards what's here with as much compassion and love as we can? It seems to me that simply asking what's here and honoring that is the most profound thing we can do. And we can do it also with the climate crisis, and we can do it with the economy, and we can do it. We can say to one another, what's it like for you to be in life right now in the midst of the things that you're in? And I think we need to talk to one another about this. I think it would really help for us to say, this is what life is like, instead of sort of skating over the, I can't fix it, I can't make it better. And that's where I've been been led to in our conversation.
Yeah. It feels like simultaneously like a whole new possibility, set of possibilities get opened up in this kind of deepening, in this inquiry. And there's, I'm noticing that in the deepening, there's also a grief. And so it really matters that we get acquainted with how to be with grief and heaviness and not let that be where we stop. You know, there's, I don't know what that, somebody said, you know, pain runs deep and joy runs even deeper. Feels like I have that as a kind of a mantra so that I can have my kind of essential joy as a hopeful reminder that that's more profound than my pain. You know, that I might be able to sink into the grief because I know beneath it there is something that's holding it, something that is not of the same order as that. And this week, Justin, you know that I'm doing this internal family systems training, and I found a part of me that was like this sprightly apocalyptic light. And it was like I was being reminded that there's plenty of things that are mishaps in the world. And this is also true, the nature of your being as this apocalyptic light that is so profound and wide and important, that is what is a foundation. It called itself a foundational apocalyptic light. And the image that was, when, you know, you see in the movies when a kind of bomb gets dropped, a nuclear bomb, and it's just the light is just so huge, everything is taken over. Like, that was the nature of it. And it gave me such a deep kind of faith to encounter that in myself, that anything happens in amongst that is held in that kind of profound, foundational, essential light. And so in this moment where I'm feeling the kind of the pain and hurt in my chest that I can identify as a kind of grief, that the inevitability of all of this mishapness is here, there is also a connection to something foundationally light that lets that be okay, that's there, because I know it's not all of me. It's a part. So it also feels really important that we talk about this in a kind of re-educating ourselves kind of way, that it's okay to have feelings because of something much more profound at the same time that's also here. That means we can have them and we don't have to avoid them. We don't have to put them to the side because they're going to kill us or something. There's something much more profound. So I'm feeling really grateful for that, and grateful for Norman for telling the truth so kindly today.
Mm. Yeah, me too. I'm left, Lizzie, deeply moved by this discovery of yourself, which is true of all of us, is that alongside everything that we experience is something that is of us, that is pure, brilliant light. And so many traditions know this about us and are trying to remind us that the light and the mishaps go together. Yeah. They're one and the same. So thank you, Lizzie, for being one who walks this path with me and with all of us. And thank you to Norman for writing in the way that he does. And it's time for us to finish, and we'll be back again for another week next Sunday, 9 a.m. UK time. We're live on Facebook. You can catch us in all the podcast places and on our website and on YouTube and on Instagram and all of that if you want to catch up with us later. And thank you, Lizzie, and thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Justin. Bye.